Hello and welcome to the Geek Embassy Watches Dunkirk. I'm your host, Regina McMenemy, and today I'm here with Mark and Ryan. I won't use my same line, so just say hi.
Hi.
And today we have a different type of summer movie to talk about. Different from our superheroes we've watched so far, at least.
Yeah, that's for sure. And
different in a lot of other ways, I guess you could say. But before we sort of launch into talking about Dunkirk, I have to share my experience of going to see Dunkirk, at least one part of my experience going to see Dunkirk. I went just last night. Mark and Ryan both saw it, I think, a couple weeks ago. So I'm kind of the late one to the party here. And the theater was mostly empty, and we were a little late because we had to wait in a concessions line before we went in. And we walk in, and there's a trailer already playing. And there's some kids up on the screen, and I sit down, and all of a sudden there's a clown on the screen. Terrifying clown on the screen, and I realize that I'm actually watching the trailer for It. And
we all float down here, Regina. We
all float. And I hadn't watched the trailer because, like I've said numerous occasions, I don't really watch horror films at all. And I hadn't watched the trailer. I'd seen the stills, and that was enough for me to say no. So I watched the trailer and the music and the scary. And you know what, guys? Just not happening. I know you guys really want to talk about that one for our September movie, but I just can't. I love you both, but I like sleeping a lot, and I won't sleep if I watch that movie. So
you may not sleep anyway, because oftentimes dreams like that pop into your head if you don't watch them.
From the trailer, I dreamt about it last night.
Good. Were they good?
No, they weren't.
See, you've already dreamed about it, so it's okay.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Sorry. I hope, though, that the movie is as scary as the trailer is, and that it lives up to that, because it does look like an amazing movie. It's just...
Well, we'll see. Originally, when they did it before, it was done as a miniseries, and it's a big book, so I'm kind of dubious as to how well they can turn that experience into a
two-hour movie.
Yeah,
they'll have to be lots of editing, and I don't know. I haven't seen the original series, and Chris was talking about the fact that it wasn't about kids, and that this one is about the kids, and I don't know.
It was a two-part series. The first half was about the kids portion of it, and then the second part was them as adults.
Okay.
So it was just a two-hour mark. It was only a two-parter, if I remember correctly.
So it's hard to
remember. Yeah.
The Stand was four parts, and this one was a two, I think.
Okay. Well, I will host it if you guys want to go watch it. I will lead the discussion.
We'll see. We'll discuss afterwards.
Okay. All right. So let's launch into our discussion of Dunkirk. Who can give like a summary of what this movie was about, like the historical significance of it?
Basically, it was about the evacuation of the British army and a good chunk of the French army off of the beaches of France back over to Britain after German forces pretty much kicked them off of Europe.
Right.
They actually encircled them at Dunkirk and were trying to push in to capture them, but the delaying forces that they had on the outskirts of the beaches held the Germans back long enough for a week to let the Allied forces evacuate back over to Britain, and it was done not just with military ships, but basically, you know, every time kind of boat or ship that they could press
they could get out there,
Britain was sent across the channel to rescue them, and it was literally thousands of boats. So
Yep.
They managed to get pretty much all of them away in a week.
Yeah. Yeah, it was impressive numbers from what they were originally at least thinking they were going to be able to evacuate and what they ended up evacuating.
Right.
Yeah. And this is a fictional, you know, story based on historical events.
Right.
So these are not like real people necessarily. This wasn't a documentary, but it was a fictional world built on real life events.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was, I'm trying to remember how many, what the numbers were. Were there four storylines?
Three.
So
yeah,
it was
three different. Yeah, it was kind of a weird, but it was three different, not necessarily storylines of different people, just kind of three different time markers during this evacuation. Yeah, that'd be a better way to put it. Three different perspectives.
What'd you say?
Three different perspectives.
Perspectives.
The same events going on.
Right. Right.
They're called the mold, the sea, and the air.
Right. Yeah.
And they tried to mark them in such a way at the beginning that you would know what the hell was going on, but I was having a hard time following what was going on.
Yeah, I found the very beginning of the movie to be quite disorienting. Like, I was having trouble. Even after they put the markers in, and for those who haven't seen it, there are actual words on the screen that say one, the mole, two, the sea, and three, the air, was it?
Yep.
And even after those, I was still having a hard time kind of piecing together what was happening. I don't remember exactly what moment it was where it finally all kind of clicked for me, but at one moment I was finally like, okay, I think I kind of get where this is going now.
Probably right towards the end when you finally realize, oh, he's doing his last-ditch effort to bring down that bomber at the same time we're figuring out how these guys ended up in the boat or whatever. And yeah, it's just, to me, it wasn't very, very clear. I kind of felt like he was trying to use the telling the story out of sequence gag that made Quentin Tarantino who he is, or famous as he is, and I didn't really feel like it was working to me.
Yeah, I can see that. It didn't take me that long to get to the point where I felt like it had come together in my head as to what was happening or how the characters were going to potentially interact. But it was definitely off-putting in its construction, I thought. So what about you, Ryan? What did you think of sort of the construction, the way the movie started, I guess?
It was confusing. It, you know, it's kind of one of those things that you're not really sure what kind of movie you're going into. Like, if you think you're going into a traditional war movie, that's definitely not what you get with this. But you know, me personally, like I'll run into movies, thinking that I have one way of thinking of the way it's going to go. And then like, I fail to pay attention at the beginning to kind of unlock the code to the rest of the movie. And this was one of those movies. It's like, I saw the words at the beginning, but I didn't really give them much thought at the time.
They didn't really give you a good amount of context for them. That was the
right problem. And that was it. It was just kind of like, if you weren't like paying attention to what was, how those were being delivered to you during the film, you were kind of lost up until the point where you started to see these different threads interweave with one another. And you're like, okay, right. Mm-hmm. Then you start to decode it, and you're like, I was kicking myself at that point thinking, man, I should have paid attention more at the beginning.
Well, I think it was hard to pay attention at the beginning. And I think that was intentional. I think it was intended, and I don't know, you know, this could just be my interpretation of it. But I think it was kind of an aesthetic film where it was trying to give you the lived experience of some of those characters in this evacuation. And I think because of that, you have that disconnect. We're so used to stories and movies being so linear and going from one event to the next in a chronological order in a way that that makes linear sense. And you don't have that in this film. This film was meant to put you in and make you as confused as the men who were on the beach, as the captains who were, you know, charting the yachts out to, you know, to help with the rescue. So I thought it was cool that that was the way it kind of went.
Even right. And I mean, it is not unusual for Christopher Nolan to do this. I mean, yeah. He did, what's the movie I'm trying to think of?
Was it Memento?
Memento, thank you. That was the one where it was, they showed the movie backwards, you know, type thing. Right. So, I mean, this isn't a new concept to do movies this way. And, you know, it's just one of those things, though, that the average audience has been, you know, kind of programmed to expect a movie to go one way or the other. And I'm no different, even though I, you know, study and work and teach in the industry. It threw me off, and I didn't like read enough about the movie at the beginning to know that I should be looking for that type of thing. So,
right.
But it didn't change the fact that I liked the movie quite a bit, just for the cinematography of it, the very real and raw look at what these guys were going through. I mean, I really felt panicked. Like a lot of times throughout this movie,
so much like I was like, why am I so on edge? Like through so much of it, I was just feeling myself tense.
Exactly why?
What was that?
I can tell you exactly why.
Because of the ticking clock.
No, he used the soundtrack. Part of it, yeah. He used the soundtrack to amp up the movie way more than what it needed to be amped up. I thought it was. To be honest, I did not like the movie one bit. I thought it was boring. I thought it was a disjointed mess. So. And I'm not saying that because, you know, it wasn't a popcorn movie or anything like that, but being a history fan, you know, I was looking forward to seeing, you know, some of the, you know, what they show of Dunkirk. Like, if you go and you look for images of the Dunkirk evacuation on Google, which I'm doing right now, you'll see that he did nothing to even get close to what those beaches and what that shoreline looked like. I felt like he had $100 million budget, and I don't know what he squandered it on, if it was all actors fees, but I don't know, he didn't do what I wanted to see. And I wasn't expecting a popcorn movie. I was expecting, you know, a historically accurate movie about the evacuation, but I wanted to see these set pieces where, you know, there was 100,000 or 400,000, 300,000 people on the beach, you know, thousands of ships in the water in the background, you know, and, you know, explosions and fires and stuff like that. And it was just like, I felt like he didn't apparently use his budget for any of that. And so I'm sitting there waiting for these cool, epic shots, and there was never a cool, epic shot. And I was just like, what are we watching here?
I think what it was is he was trying to, which I think worked to a degree, was he was trying to put the audience in this uncomfortable position that the soldiers and rescuers and pilots that were involved in it were in. And he wasn't, I don't think his intent was to give you the overall grand scale of the whole thing. I think he was just trying to put you in the shoes of these different situations with three different scenarios that were playing out in the movie. Now, I would agree with you that most people were going to find this movie really boring, but it, and there was a couple of points where I was just like, where's this going? You know, I was starting to feel a little bit bored in a couple parts myself until I kind of got where the movie was and started enjoying it for what it was. And then tried
instead
to unravel
of what your
the puzzle
expectation was like you had right. to I didn't go in with any expectations because I didn't read anything about it. I didn't watch the trailers. I didn't look at the images. I knew only that it was based on an actual historical event and that it was Christopher Nolan. Those were the two pieces of information I went in with. So I knew it was going to be about something about World War II. I didn't go in thinking it was going to be historically accurate at all, because I don't ever expect movies to be historically accurate because they're not documentaries, they're fictional. And so, you know, if it doesn't recreate it perfectly.
It wasn't even that I wanted it to be perfect. I just wanted to see some of, you know,
right. You see the grand sweeping vision.
Yeah. And I didn't really ever feel like we got to see that. And going back to what you were talking about, you know, you felt like you're on edge the whole time. I figured out really quickly what was going on. He basically did the same trick he did in which of the Batmans was it with the Joker in it?
The second one, Dark Knight.
Yeah. Well, in that movie, he was using that, what he was doing in this movie, which was anytime the Joker is on screen or going to be in a scene in that movie, if you listen to the soundtrack, all it was a single cello.
Mm-hmm.
Just sawing the same note and ramping it up and high, you know, louder in the mix as time is going on. And he did that all over the place in the soundtrack for Dunkirk. And in my opinion, 9 times out of 10, I'm watching what's going on the screen. I'm listening to what he's doing in the soundtrack. And I'm going, this doesn't really deserve this treatment. It isn't, you're not going anywhere with the action to really make it build like that. You know, I felt right. like he was artificially trying to push people to go, oh, what's happening? You know, and it wasn't what he was doing.
I would have totally agree with you. The soundtrack and the music behind it, I thought was the weakest part of the movie itself. It seemed like it was, you know, like you were saying, it was too much of the film. It seemed more of a distraction than it did anything else. I'm just like, man, it just, because there was so little dialogue in this movie that... Mm-hmm. The music was such a huge part, but you know, I think some of that could have been filled with just the natural sounds of what was going on. Like you said, I mean, they didn't have to, I don't think they had to show like the epic explosions and like the encroaching Germans. I don't think that was the point of it or what he was trying to get across, but you know, you could have heard more of the distant sounds of war, I guess, in especially the beach scenes. But you know, again, it goes back to, I think he was trying to, you know, put you in, you know, that's why he didn't go to multiple boats. He just went to the one boat, you know, mm-hmm. with the guy and the two teenage kids.
Yeah.
You know, and he didn't go to like the boat that you could see off in the distance a little bit. And then he followed the one character into the larger battleship that, you know, ended up getting sunk and so on and so forth.
Well, I think that's why I think the cinematography was effective for that kind of storytelling, because I felt like we were trying to follow from small points of view. Like it was only going from what someone could see in those situations in each, you know, each of the three sort of markers that were given.
Well, there's several spots where you can, where there was, they were looking at the beach, and yeah, there was a lot of guys out there, but there weren't hundreds of thousands of guys out there ever in any of their shots. And I know, yeah, you're not going to go and get 100,000, you know, extras to do that. But I mean, if he had spent just a little bit of his budget on a little bit of CGI and filled out that beach a bit and put in a little smoke or fire here, would have gone a long way to making somebody like me a little more happy and interested in this film.
Right. But, I can agree with that, but I mean, he didn't. So, you know, looking at the movie for what it was,
which, you know, is basically just a character piece, right? I mean, he's just,
yeah.
Well, kind of. And that was partially. That would be the other weak spot of the film that I thought is, yes, you were intimately embedded with these different characters, and but throughout the film, I didn't really care about any of them. And there was no connection to, like, oh man, I really hope this guy makes it out. You know, yeah. It was, you know, I think the pilots were probably the closest connection that you got throughout the movie.
And the dad piloting the boat.
The dad, right. Yeah.
Those were, and I like Kenneth Branagh's character, but you only get to see him, you know, maybe on screen for all of 5 minutes during the whole movie. So,
right.
So it's really those four characters that you really, you know, have any kind of feeling towards. And two of the characters in the show you absolutely hate. Like we spend most of our time following this one guy around who's trying to sneak out ahead of everybody else because he's a chicken shit. I get it. You're in a war and it's horrible, but it's like, I can't rightfully go, well, I sure hope he makes it out. I'm more like going, God, I can't wait until those machine gun bullets plow through that boat and hit him. I just can't wait. And it never happens. So there's no payoff. It's just like, oh, I hate that guy. And the guy who kills one of the boys on the boat, it's like, everybody's just cool with it. I'm like, really? That guy would have been going out on his ear over the side.
Yeah.
So, I didn't feel like they were cool with that at all.
Well, they were way cooler about it than they should have been.
Well, you know, I don't know.
Well, that wasn't how I thought about that, but yeah. Right. And it just goes back to, you know, the human emotional state during war in the first place. Like, yeah. You know, were these guys just at that point in time so frustrated and so raw and so mentally checked out and emotionally checked out that was the reality of it? And, you know, one of the things that I took away from the entire film of how real and raw it felt throughout the whole thing, and you didn't connect with these characters, but is that how these guys really felt in that moment? They were just at that point in time, they were so desperate to not be trapped on the sandy hellhole that, you know, all bets were off. And they're just like, you know, think about things you experience in your real life. Like, you just get to a point sometimes where you're just like, I just don't care anymore, you know, type situation. And, you know, not being in the military and in that situation, I couldn't say for sure, but it seems like that, you know, the thousand-yard stare type scenario where you're just like,
well, I get that for everybody else, but at that point dad and his son haven't been stuck on that beach for, you know, however long they've been stuck on that beach. You know, they don't have a reason to be all checked out and everything, and they shouldn't be okay.
I disagree with that. I think they did have a reason, because he said his oldest son was killed week 3 of the war. So he was already damaged by it. And his life had already been damaged by it. And I think that that's why he took so much empathy toward the, you know, the submarine guy that he picked up. I think that was because he said to, you know, to his son, you know, he's shell-shocked. He, you know, he may never be the same again. You know, he's not the same person he was. And I thought the empathy was admirable given the situation and given what happened.
I understand what you're saying about it. I can't buy it. I mean, if I was on that boat and I personally knew this young kid, and he was a young kid, was he even 18? I think he was like 16 or something like that.
Right.
I had a hard time keeping track of who he was and what his relationship was to the two others. He wasn't his son.
No, he was just friends with the...
Right.
Yeah, he was a friend of the family.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would have been sitting there as that guy who was the father going, oh, great, now I have to go and I have to explain to his folks, or, you know, whoever his family is.
I thought his parents were dead. I thought he was an orphan, didn't I? Wasn't there something about him being an orphan? Because he said something about, I wish I could have made my parents proud at some point. And I don't know, I got the sense that he wasn't, that his parents weren't around.
He could say that if he was just, you know, in a family there where they felt disappointed with him.
Yeah, I think he just wanted to make his mark, you know. And that's what was poignant at the end where, you know, he was in the paper.
Right, he said, I want to be in the paper having done something good or something like that. So he wrote the story about him being a hero at 17, so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he died at 17, so he was 17, he said.
Yeah, but still, for all intents and purposes, a child, you know. And I wouldn't have been okay with that. I would have very well been to the point when that happened. I would have been like, you're getting off the boat now. You're going to swim home if you want to go home at all, because I'm not taking you.
Well, right, but
it wasn't like he went and stabbed him in the heart. I mean, he pushed him.
It wasn't intentional. Yeah, they locked him into a room when he was already emotionally distraught, and then the guy didn't want to. I mean, he was, like I said, shell-shocked. He was panicked to go back into that scenario of, you know, what we'd been experienced throughout the film. So I think the fact that he was physical at that point was not unheard of. I don't think it was intentional, and you could see the...
I don't think it was intentional.
The raw emotion and guilt that he felt throughout the rest of the film at that, you know, what he did.
Yeah, but it all goes back to the point where there was many characters that if you couldn't really feel anything about them were just downright unlikable, you know? I don't care about these characters. Oh, and these guys I hate and I hope they die, and they never do. Okay, fine. The only guys that I liked were the two pilots, really, and Kenneth Branagh's character. But yeah, it was a hard movie to watch, just because I, like you said, I couldn't really glom onto anybody.
Right, and it was a little confusing where Cillian Murphy came from, like in the, like his character. It's like, I don't know how, because it's like,
which one is Cillian Murphy?
He's the guy that pushed the kid down the boat, in the boat.
Oh.
He was the guy that picked up first, floating in the water, on top of that tank.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure.
He was in a U-boat. He'd been in a submarine, and that was all that we had from him was that he had been in a submarine, and that's why he didn't want to go below.
And they kind of explained where everybody else came from in that storyline in a way, like how they interconnected, but they didn't really get back to, like, they showed the origin of what happened to them, of how they ended up in that situation, but they didn't really show Cillian Murphy's. They just kind of, they showed a little bit of him here, then they showed him on the boat, and then they showed, it was, his character was the biggest mystery to me throughout the entire movie. It's like, for such a high profile actor, you know, you don't, why was he so afraid to go back? They didn't really show why he was so afraid to go back. Yeah. And that was a big part of his character, that he was just panicked to get back into the that shoreline or in that, that part of the war, but they didn't show why he was so panicked to do it.
I don't know. I thought that was summed up pretty well by the fact that he was sitting on top of a sunken U-boat. But, I mean, you know.
But they showed why everybody else was, you know, I guess.
I don't know. You know I mean, the lead, the main character, the kid that you're following around who's trying to, you know, with the stretcher, with the French guy, you know, who are trying to sneak on to the boats. I didn't see any of, you know, his history other than, I guess you see him running from the bullets in the beginning, but
right, well, that's the first guy you see in the movie. It's like you see him getting out of, which I'm guessing is, I don't know, it was that Dunkirk or was that Bruges, or
no, it was whatever the town was that they were.
I thought that town was Dunkirk.
Bruges. I thought it was Bruges because he,
well, Dunkirk in Ostend. I'm just looking at the movie poster and they show we're surrounding you thing.
You're right, the one that they were dropping on them.
That was another thing too, that the opening of that movie was, I was like, okay, here we go. This is some serious crap they're in, you know, like, you know, they're all kind of doing their thing. All of a sudden, crack, bullet goes by and then somebody's dead and they're all running and everybody's getting gunned down as they're going. And I was like, wow, this is intense. And then I felt like the rest of the movie never was paid off from that point. It was just like, well, it started off pretty intense and exciting. And then it just kind of became a waiting game.
Well, and you know, I guess you come up with a question, how do you sell, you know, stuck and waiting, you know?
Right.
That's what it was. It's like, how do we get these guys off the beach? And they're trying to problem solve. And you get the admiral or whatever that was on the dock there that was trying to logistic, you know, do the boat logistics from that little dock that they had. And, you know, then you had the basic soldier on how he was trying to get out of there. And you realize he was in the back of the line. So they try and cart up the injured guy. You know, it definitely caused more questions than answers as far as that. And I guess it almost made you want to leave that movie and like research Dunkirk a little bit more. So, you know, like, how did this happen in the first place? Why are they pushed up against this? You know, why was there only two pilots in the air? And why was there only two German, you know, or three German planes and one bomber? And
because it didn't use his budget. I don't know he used it, but he did not use it.
I don't think that was the purpose of the film. And I'll go back to what I said at the beginning, that I feel like it's an aesthetic film that's trying to make you experience it in a different way. And, you know, and I understand that people don't like films like that. And the one thing it made me think of, an old movie with Al Pacino. Oh, it's the same director. No wonder. I didn't even catch that until I just looked it up on IMDb. So there was a movie called Insomnia, mm-hmm. Al Pacino and Robin Williams. Mm-hmm. And I remember hating it when I watched it. And I don't remember what caused me to watch it again, but I remember watching it the second time. And I remember thinking of how I could feel the experience of having insomnia watching that movie.
Yeah,
like you're in that experience of it. I don't think that Dunkirk was as successful with that aesthetic as Insomnia was, but I think that was part of what he was going for, trying to put you in the chaos of the evacuation. And I think because it had so many different storylines, because we didn't have the same kind of emotional attachment to the characters as we might have had, and maybe the music was overdone. The ticking clock was the thing that killed me, because the way it like sped up in certain scenes, and in terms of like trying to increase the emotion, you know, as the, you know, the thing, and it was playing, I don't know if it was playing throughout the whole film, because I didn't pick up on it until probably about the middle of the film. I was like, oh, I see what's part of what's going on. Kind of like Mark was saying, you know, I see what's happening here with it, trying to build the emotion with the noise. But it wasn't the music so much for me as it was the ticking clock. And the relief you feel at the moment when all the boats show up, and he looks out and all the yachts have come through.
Right.
And I started to cry in that moment. And I realized that one of the reasons why I had that emotional reaction was from the tension that I had been feeling up until then. And because that was the one moment where the music swelled in any kind of recognizable movie music way. And everything before then had been so disjointed. It was the first time it sort of had that swell. And I'm like, oh, I was totally manipulated by the music.
But the music was too much. I don't agree with the mix of the music. I mean, not that the music was bad. And I agree with Mark's point that they were trying to build you up to something. And, you know, possibly to when all the boats showed up. It's just like, oh my God, now right. I feel relief. Yeah. Like these guys all feel relief. Mm-hmm. And I think they could have showed a little bit more. And I understand that would have broken from how they told the rest of the movie. They could have showed more people being evacuated at that point in time. And they really did skip that part because they were focused on these three different storylines.
Like when they showed all those boats, all those yachts coming in, you notice that you see them coming in a single file line. They don't show you the breadth of the scene. They just show you this, like, we'll just go down the line and it'll be lots of boats. And it's like, no, that's like 50 boats. You're not fooling me, dude. All you did was just line them up and went past them. I'm not impressed. The whole time, I wanted to see that. I wanted to see that evacuation like it was, and it just never happened. It's like he was trying to use every cheap trick he could in the book to like hide the fact that, well, we're doing this, you know, period piece, and it's a set in one of the most epic military evacuations in history, but we're not going to use any of the epicness of that. We're just going to tell our three little stories, and we'll try and cheat it where we can, either with the sound or, you know, a couple of boats here or there.
Right, and Christopher Nolan has never been one to spell it out for you, like in any of his movies. So it's one of those things that if you're going into a movie that is written and directed by Christopher Nolan, you have to understand that it's not going to be force-fed to you. You know, you're going to have to...
I understand that. I get that. I like his other movies. I just hated this one.
Okay.
I wanted to like it. I went into it going, woohoo, I'm really interested in seeing this movie, and then was not interested anymore.
Yeah, Candace didn't like it either. She almost fell asleep twice.
Well, Heather didn't just let her fall asleep, but she couldn't because of that damn soundtrack.
Maybe that's why I put it in there, to keep people awake.
It was the auditory experience of being poked in the side. Poke, poke,
mm-hmm. Right.
Poke, and that's what the soundtrack was.
I would like to watch it again. When it comes out, out of the theaters, I would like to watch it again, you know, after the expectation game part of it, and just analyze a little bit more. I'd be really curious to see like special features on this movie, like how they shot it. And just like what his thinking was, like listen to the director commentary and just kind of see what he was thinking when he made the film. Because, you know, one of the great things that I love about, you know, the filmmaking process is, you know, there's a bunch of different directors with different point of views, and they will make movies that are just, you know, not the same. And that's awesome. And that's what kind of helps keep movies in the film industry from getting stale, is there are directors out there that aren't trying to appease the masses. They want to make a movie that they feel in their heart is a good movie. And like it, don't like it, it's cool that there's still directors that are doing that.
I agree.
So.
Yep. All right. So I think, does anybody have anything else they wanted to add? I think we pretty much, we blew through everything I wanted to talk about: the aesthetic, the music, the characters, and the emotions. And if there was any movie it kind of reminded you of, which I touched on with my Insomnia connection, which I didn't realize was the same director, and I'm kind of amused at myself from that. But was there anything else you guys wanted to say about it?
I agree with the Insomnia thing. I remember watching that and just feeling really tired at the end of it.
Well, there's that one scene where he's driving and it's the windshield wipers.
Yep.
And you're just kind of lulling into it. And I was like, and like I said, the first time I'm like, why do I hate this movie so much? And then I realized it was because you were actually, you know, kind of in his experience, which I thought mm-hmm. was awesome. And I did feel, I think, like I said at the beginning, I think this was supposed to be off-putting. I think it was supposed to be unsettling. And I was okay with that. And I thought it can, I also had more emotional attachment, I think, to the characters than you guys did. I didn't feel like anybody was good necessarily. And I wasn't rooting for a whole bunch of them to not die. I was rooting for Kenneth Branagh not to die in that scene where he's like standing on the thing and he's closing his eyes because he knows he's about to die. And then the plane gets blown up at the end. Mm-hmm. Oh, that was awesome. I was so happy that he didn't die. But like you said, he was one of the big names that was on the screen for, you know, not very much time, but right. had that much of an impact. So,
and one of the things I will point out that I thought was rather amusing is why in Christopher Nolan movies, he feels the need to cover the lower half of Tom Hardy's face all the time. I don't understand. It's like, you think about it, you know, when he was Bane, and then, you know, in the pilot, it's like the lower half of his face is always covered.
Well, was I the only one who, like, okay, so two of the pilots had words written across the, I meant to look it up and I didn't have a chance to, across their masks. Did you notice this? Am I the only one? It wasn't all three of them. There were two of them. And I wondered if it was like something like the planes have the different good luck symbols on them sometimes. And I wondered if they had something like that. No, is that just me?
I didn't notice it. I know what you're talking about as far as, you know, typically they have some sort of mascot or avatar yeah. painted on the side of
the plane
or the name of the pilot or something like that. Mm-hmm. I get that, but I've never heard of anybody doing anything with their masks like that. And I didn't notice it on the masks when I was watching the movie.
Okay.
Sorry.
I'm trying to see if I can find a picture of,
yeah, I was just trying to see.
Film, but... Yeah. I don't know. I would like to, oh, there's one. Yeah. I see, like, right. Unfortunately, yeah, photos they're showing is like the mask like pulled away from the
mouth. Yeah. There was one. There's one. I still can't quite see it.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, so there was something, I wasn't sure if that was part of what was happening with it, but yeah, I can't tell from this picture. But there was something written on two of the three masks.
Yeah, might have been some hidden meeting. Who knows?
Could
but
be.
Anyway, it was good. At the end of the movie, I enjoyed the experience, and you know, wanted to know a little bit more about it. But there was, you know, definitely some confusion and some, you know, disconnect with the characters and some of the disconnect with the editing of the film. Not that it was the film editor's fault or, you know, Christopher Nolan's fault. It's just I didn't pick it up in time. You know, it was the delay in me as a viewer. And that's why I kind of wanted to see it again to see if I could pick up something that I missed. Because it is, it's a thinker war movie. It's not a sitting.
Right. You know, and that's actually what Chris said. As soon as we left it, he's like, that wasn't a war movie.
No, it was an art film masquerading as a war movie.
Oh, you didn't say that. I can see why you say that. But he was just like, it wasn't, you know, bloody bodies. There weren't a lot of bullets. There weren't a lot of this. He's like, it was a very different experience. And I thought that was an interesting observation too. Like, does it fit this? Cause, our babysitter had actually asked, you know, she's like, well, she's like, I was curious about this. Tell me what you think. And, you know, we might go see it. And so that was first thing Chris said is, well, don't go into it thinking it's a war movie. Cause it's not. So I don't think it would fit that category at all, but I'm sticking with my aesthetic.
It is an experience based around a war.
Yes, exactly.
I guess would be a good way to look at it.
Yes, exactly. Based on, you know, historical events. So we've been wrapping these up with thumbs. So how many thumbs? I'm guessing, Mark, you're zero thumbs.
Zero thumbs. Did not work on any level for me.
Ryan.
I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe a thumb and a half to two thumbs. I mean, I should have almost seen
thumbs. It. You said that you agree that this was disjointed or that wasn't done well. That's not two thumbs. That's like maybe a thumb or a thumb and a half, or half a thumb. Or...
I'll do one of these. How about them apples?
A big middle finger. I don't know.
No, because I left really enjoying the film for what it was. I just would like to see it again because I didn't pick it all up in the first round.
Yeah, it was a good movie. I agree. It's definitely one of those I think that would be interesting to watch again, simply to see how much of it you can pick up on, and you know how different of an experience it could be knowing what it was now when you go in to watch it, as opposed to having that expectation versus reality of the movie.
So, correct. Agreed. Yeah.
And I'm somewhere between 1.5 and 2 thumbs. Like I really enjoyed the experience because it wasn't what I was expecting and it was different. And I didn't have the desire for the historical accuracy that Mark had. I see the pictures. Mark just messaged our chat with 3 pictures of what the actual evacuation looked like, and it definitely didn't have that experience.
Yeah. You can see why, but I'm like going.
I didn't miss any of this because I didn't have any of this in my head. So.
But can you see now why I was so
utterly
disappointed? I mean, even if it had only just been 1 or 2 quick shots of that depth, I would have been a lot better. I would have felt a lot better about what I was seeing, but I was never given that. I felt like he was always trying to cheat it. So.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It seemed like if you look at a couple of these shots, it does seem like I do remember scenes in the movie that they're pretty close to. I mean, not definitely the last one with like the multiple battleships side by side. That
right.
You did not see that. You only saw the one at a time. Scenario, but like the first picture of like the guys like pressed up against the dock, I think when they were like carrying the body to try and get on the ship first, they definitely showed that scope, that specific shot there. I think they did mm-hmm. show. But you're right, the multiple boats definitely were not shown in the movie.
Yeah. I don't know, Mark, you might know this because you're more the history buff among us, but I leaned over to Chris when they bombed the hospital ship and said, I thought they weren't supposed to do that. And no. Chris said this was before Geneva, right?
No, the Geneva Convention came out either, I think it was right before World War One, because the Geneva Convention actually specifically stated that, or maybe it was after World War One. Either way.
World War Two, don't you mean? World War Two?
No, the Geneva Convention either came out right before or right after World War. So
okay.
They were not supposed to bomb that hospital.
Okay, because I was like, what is going on? That's like clearly a medical ship, and they shouldn't be bombing a medical ship, because that's why they had the big X's painted on the sides of them.
And again, you weren't supposed to take war refugees and like cook them in ovens either. So
well,
I don't think Hitler really cared about that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Germans a lot of times do not care about stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay, so I was right about that, because I was like, I don't think they're supposed to be doing this, too.
Yeah, and I did think the same thing during the movie. It just seems like, wow, that's really cold-hearted.
Yeah, seriously.
I saw it and went, that's the Germans during World War II for you.
Yeah. Terrible. All right, well, mixed reviews here on the Geek Embassy Watches Dunkirk. We'd love to hear from you guys if you've seen the movie. What do you think? Are you on the aesthetic team or on the it should have been more historically accurate team? Or in the I don't care, it was a dumb movie team. You could put that in there too. Leave us a comment on the website, thegeekembassy.com. Catch up with us on Twitter at thegeekembassy. And we'd love to hear what you think. And until next time, get your geek on.
Later.
Ciao.